Good morning. I know the official Rabbi Fulda memorial shear is in for another 2 weeks, but being that today's shear are dedicated to Rabbi Fulda, I just wanted to say a quick word before we start. What an honor it is to speak here in memory of Rabbi Fulda. Rabbi Fulda was a giant. Rabbi Fulda survived Kristallnacht, came across to these shores, ultimately signed up for Yeshiva University, was head of the student organization way back when, and spent his life at Yeshiva, whether it was in Central, but many more years here teaching beginners in the James Stryer School in IBC. I was lucky enough to be his colleague for a little bit over 2 decades, which really isn't that much in the Rabbi Fulda history. My mother was a student of Rabbi Fulda. My mother-in-law, Lev Shalom, was a student of Rabbi Fulda. And Yehi Zichro Baruch. I wanted to spend a few minutes today talking about the topic of the Who is a Jew controversy. So much is written about it in the newspapers, and I think so few people understand what people are fighting about. I think most people think that the discussion of who is a Jew and the related questions is somehow a fight between the Haredim and the Zionists, etc. And whoever says that people don't fall under are really, they really hate everybody, and they're really not Zionist, etc., even if they say they are. And they believe that somehow or another this is a major issue which is going to drive a wedge between different parts of the Jewish community. I think that that's not exactly true, and I think if people understand what exactly everyone was fighting about, I think they would better appreciate that this is a halachic issue, and there's probably reasonable ways to support either side. This isn't a matter necessarily of politics. Again, this is Israel, so it's hard to say anything is not a matter of politics. But in terms of what the underlying disagreement is about, that's really a matter of halacha. The reason I speak about it this week is, interestingly, across the street in the Kol Yom Rishon, the two speakers mentioned to me that they're speaking about Geirus today. And they thought it would be a good idea, maybe if everyone spoke about Geirus. So I said, okay, I'm in. And the reason that everyone wants to speak about Geirus is because it's actually related to this week's parsha. If you take a look at number one on your source sheet, at the very beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, which we read yesterday, it says, "Vayikach Avram ve'es Sarai ishto ve'es Lot ben Achiv ve'es kol rechushim asher rechoshu ve'es hanefesh asher asu b'choron v'yetzu l'lechas arza kenan v'yivou arza kenan." Translation, so Avram took his wife Sarai and his nephew Lot and all of the material goods that they had acquired over their time, and also the nefesh, the souls that they created in Haran. It's a little bit of an odd statement. What is es hanefesh asher asu b'Haran? What does that mean? They were making golems? Hard to imagine. They were having children? We know, unfortunately, that was not true at that point. So what was es hanefesh asher asu b'Haran? Rashi comments in number 2. Asher asu b'charon sheech nisim tachas kanfei hashchina. Avraham migayeres ha'anoshim, v'sara migayeres ha'anoshim. That in fact, while they were in Haran, not only were they believers themselves, but Avram and Sarai at that point ran around spreading the word of God and converting people. That Avram would convert the men and Sarai would convert the women. And in fact, it says when you convert a person, that this might be somewhat of a halachic statement even, that when someone converts a convert, at that point, they are to a certain extent halachically considered the parent of the person that converted. We know that there is a concept, gershen is gayer kekatan shenola dami, a convert is, hate to use the word, reborn, as if they are born again. So if you're being born, you need parents. Who are the parents? It's the Beis Din. Halachically, one could discuss many interests and questions. When a dayan passes away, perhaps all the gerim who that dayan converted would have to say kaddish for them. Maybe sit shiva for them. if somebody is not blessed with children, maybe we'd recommend that you go into the gerus business. And you can be Mekayim Peru Ravu that way. So that's all based on this Rashi, that in fact, that what was going on there was gerus. Now, it's hard to understand. How many people were there Megayer? It sounds like a lot. However, by the time that Avram passes away, the only person who believes in a monotheistic God is Yitzhak. So whatever happened to all of these gerim? What did gerus mean before there was a Torah? What were they accepting exactly? How was this done? Doesn't gerus require a Beis Din of three? What was Sarah doing? What was Avram doing? Unclear. These are all good questions that I don't have very good answers to, so I'm glad no one asked it. But at the end of the day, this is the first noted case of gerus in the Torah, at least in Rashi. And that's why a lot of people like to speak about gerus on this week. In terms of gerus itself, the way we currently convert people, that actually is not learned from Avram, but rather it's learned from later on in history. Take a look at number 3, the Gemara increases. The Gemara says, Rebbe Omer kachem ka'avoseichem. Rebbe has a drasha that when we do conversions nowadays, it has to be the same way the original conversion was done. What's the original conversion? Ma avoseicha lo nichnusu lebris, ela b'mila v'tfila v'hartza asdam, af hem lo yachnisu lebris, ela b'mila v'tfila v'hartza asdam. So interestingly, what are we talking about? The very first gerus in history, halacha gerus, was... No, Avram was before the Torah. It was actually Har Sinai. Before Har Sinai, nobody was Jewish. It's very interesting that before whenever you look at the pictures that they have in the kids' books, so Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, they all have kapotas and long beards. They all look so religious, right? But it's a surprise to kids when you tell them that technically one can make a strong argument that they weren't even Jewish. Not Avram, not Yitzhak, not Yaakov, not Yosef, not Reuven, not Yehuda. Oh, so because even though they weren't Jewish, we know from last week's parsha that all the descendants of Avram were obligated in Bris Milah. Bris Milah was the exception. Right? At the end of last week's parsha, we learned that mitzvah that was given before the Torah. So the Jews and Mitzrayim, the Levim did it, it would seem, but the Jews in general probably didn't do it as much as they should have, which is why, right before Karban Pesach, there was a mass milah. Later on by Yeshua, there was a mass milah. Milah is a little bit different. Yes, the Avos kept the Torah, but it could be that they were volunteering, not obligated. That's a major discussion. There's a sefer called the Parashas Drachim, which has a very long piece about this, arguing whether they were considered Jewish or not. It's interesting, if you ask your typical elementary school student, and I'm afraid to say high school as well, whether Noah was Jewish, whether Adam was Jewish, they undoubtedly would tell you, of course they were. But of course we know when we talk about non-Jews, we refer to them as B'nai Noach, right? The prototypical non-Jew is Noach. Yeah, they might be wonderful people, but Noach most definitely was not Jewish. So, when did the Jewish nation begin? The Jewish nation began with a massive gerus at Har Sinai. At Har Sinai, when we accepted the Torah, we all converted. Right? We are all on a certain level, Ben Gerim, or Benos Gerim in this room. Yeah, we are all the descendants of Gerim, because up until Har Sinai, there was no such thing. Everyone had to be Megayer. And therefore, the Gemara tells us, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a Gerus, we should try to do it the same way that he did it. So you got to look at Har Sinai and see what happened. Yes? We weren't Jewish. We were B'nai Yisrael. Right, we were the children of Yaakov, Yisrael, but in terms of were we chayiv in Shabbos while we were in Mitzrayim? Right, did we have to keep the Torah and mitzvahs? Obviously not. There was no Torah that was given out to the general populace. because there was Esav. That is the Alter Zeta, right? We are still biological descendants of them. It would seem at that point we were not yet Jewish. But yet, no one, you could argue when perhaps, you know, once Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov accepted upon themselves the Torah, then to a certain extent they were Jewish, right? And it's interesting because there are a lot of things that the Avos do which raise an eyebrow, right? Let's take an obvious case. Yaakov Avinu marries two sisters. That's not allowed. So the short answer was, well, he wasn't Jewish. He didn't have to. He volunteered. But some, when you're volunteering, you have the right to make a decision and say, you know what? In this case, it makes sense to volunteer. In that case, it doesn't make sense to volunteer. Yaakov knew he needed 12 shvatim. He knew that these were the women that were going to produce them. Right? So therefore, his usual volunteer find the tuck. He took a pass on it right now. Me'eva ha'nahar. Yeah, well, he was. Again, Abraham was undoubtedly a monotheist. And that was undoubtedly a radical idea in those days. Right? So therefore, he put himself on the other side. But that just alone being a monotheist, right? By and large, Christians and Muslims are monotheists. But they're not Jewish. I think Muslims do. I think in this room, I'd say the overwhelming majority of people sitting in this room right now are not chayiv in bris, right? So you know, I don't think that that's what makes a person Jewish. So that's what the there are deeper questions you could ask on this, right? So if a couple was married before Har Sinai, were they still married afterwards? Right? If a couple converts, they're no longer married. Right? If a person converts, they're no longer related to their relatives. Right? So that didn't apply here, for whatever reasons. There are good reasons. Right? But this is what we're using to learn how Geirus is done. And the Gemara tells us, well, what was done at Har Sinai? Let's take a look back at number 3. He said you need Mila, Tevila, Vahartza Asdam. Mila, we know what that is, right? That all men, if they convert, need to be circumcised. Tvila, everyone needs to go to the mikvah. Mikvah and hartzah asdam. What's hartzah asdam? So that sprinkling of the blood on the mizbeach. In order for a person to convert, that is what is necessary, the Gemara tells us. You have to bring a korban. You have to, men and women have to go to the mikvah. And men require a bris milah as well. Wait a second. That korban thing, where did that come from? So elameyataha inna deleka carbon lona kabul gerim. So wait a second. If I require a carbon, that means I need a base amigdash. If I don't have a base amigdash, I can't bring a carbon. If I can't bring a carbon, so nowadays I can't have any more gerim. The Gemara says, "Amarav achabar Yaakov chiyogor itchem ger asher besolchechem." Tan rabbanu ger bisman hazet tzarich yifrosh rova lekina. So it says no, that there is an idea that if a person is not have the ability to bring a carbon, as is the state of affairs nowadays, then you don't, then the carbon is not ma'akev, you still can become Jewish without it. The Gemara says originally they said, however, all gerim were told to put money aside, because we hope and expect very soon the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and at that point they're going to have to bring a carbon. God willing, the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt in the very near future, a lot of people are going to owe carbonos. Right, every woman who gave birth owes a carbon yoledes for each birth, for example. Right, I'm sure there's a few of us probably owe a carbon chattas here or there for accidental sins that we've done. So this is another one. So originally they said put the money aside for it, but then they backed down on that. So Rav Shimon Kvar Nivna Alav Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai Ubatlu B'Deyat HaKala. So Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai, realizing that the exile was going to take a little longer than we had hoped, realized that this was a bad idea. This money's going to be put aside. People are going to forget what it's for. They're going to end up spending it. We don't put the money aside either. So carbon at the time being is off the list. So what does it take to convert? So for men, it's bris milah and the tefillah. For women, it's just tefillah. As the old saying goes, for the men it's a snip and a dip, and for the women it's just a dip. Now, what is notably missing from this list? education, right? Acceptance, kabbalas ha-mitzvahs. That's a big one. Wait a second. All a woman has to do is just jump in the mikveh and that's it. She can marry whoever she wants. We're good to go. Hard to imagine. Isn't the Gemara missing the most important thing? So, it's interesting. What is the case we're dealing with here? When did everyone go through this milah and tefillah? What was the historical context? Har Sinai. And what was the whole purpose of Har Sinai? If we're correct, if we're sitting at Shavuos and I say to my kids, so tell me, what did you learn in school? What did we do at Har Sinai? They said, oh, we all went to the mikveh. Right away, I'd have to pull them out of the yeshivish, the Hasidish school they're in. No, that wasn't the point behind it. Oh, all the men got a bris milah. No, the whole purpose of the whole process is Nasa v'nishma, the Kabbalas ha-mitzvahs. Yes. Every Yom Kippur they needed one. They had a mikveh somehow or another. Right? I can't take you there. But the assumption is that there was a mikveh there. There's a lot of good questions. What did you have near Har Sinai, right? All the wheat for the matzahs, all the wheats for the karbanos, all the grapes for the wine. Where were you getting that in the desert? All good questions. It worked out. Right? This too. So, while the Gemara lists practically milah and tefillah, obviously the most important underlying point here is kabbalas ha-mitzvos. Right? The person has to want to be. What if there's three rabbis sitting at the beach, I don't know what they're doing there, and there happens to be a non-Jewish woman runs in the water. Does she become Jewish? You'd imagine that, right? There's no kabbalas ha-mitzvah. She doesn't want to become Jewish. She's not accepting anything, right? The fact that she went to the mikveh in front of a kosher basin, that doesn't really matter for much. Really, the most important part, it would seem, is the kabbalas ha-mitzvahs. The fact that somebody wants to join the Jewish people and accepts upon themselves, you know, what comes along with it, right? When becoming Jewish, yes, there's many positive things. On the other hand, there's many negatives, right? You realize that you're accepting anti-Semitism on yourself, right? You have to realize that you're accepting on yourself to keep Shabbos. You have to keep kosher. You have to keep Taras and Mishpacha. Right? It's not all fun and games being Jewish. So you have to make a decision. You have to accept it. That goes back to Avraham Avinu. Why was there bris milah in Mitzrayim? So that was also this week's parasha, right? It says that Avraham Yitzchak, that was the one mitzvah that Avraham got. It didn't make them Jewish. The Gemara in Yevamos discusses a case where perhaps you are not having very good kabbalas ha-mitzvahs. What if somebody decides to be Jewish, not because they want to be close to God, but because on their own they have their own reasons why they'd like to? So the Mishnah tells us the following halacha: Hanitin al shifra v'nishtachra al uvedes kochavim v'nisgaira harei zeh lo yikanes v'imkanes ein motzin miyado. The Gemara says, what if there's a rumor that a Jewish man has a relationship with a shifra kananis, a non-Jewish maidservant, or with a regular non-Jewish woman? And then all of a sudden that woman decides to convert. So it says that man is not allowed to marry her. If he marries her, they don't have to get divorced, but they're not allowed to marry her. Hanitan al Isha Sisro Tsiyuah Mitachas Yado Afapisha Kanas Yotzi. What if there's a rumor that there is a man who has a relationship with someone else's wife, and then magically her husband divorces her? He's not allowed to marry her at all, and if they get married, they have to, in fact, undo the marriage. Okay, makes sense. But why? The Gemara has a very important machlokes. Why is it that this man can't marry the woman who decided to convert? So, hagiyos miyahavya. About what do we care? Isn't she still, she converted, right? She's not married to anyone. She's a convert. Why can't he marry her? Reminu echad isha nisgai roshum isha v'echad isha nisgai roshum ish v'chein misha nisgai roshum shulchem alachem roshum abdei shlomo enum geryum, direi Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Nechemiah says that anybody who converts for any reason other than the right reasons, the conversion doesn't work. So if a man converts to marry a woman, or a woman converts to marry a man, or a person converts because they think that with this they'll be able to become part of the great Jewish conspiracy and get a lot of money out of it, right? Or for whatever reason, or they convert because now they can play on an Israeli basketball team. Whatever reason other than the proper reasons, Rav Nechemia says the geiris doesn't work. Rav Nechemia Omer, Echad geiri arayos, Echad geiri chalomos, Echad geiri Mordechai ve'Esther, Einum geiris. Gives a list, right? We'll just mention the last one. All the people who in Mordechai Esther were given permission to kill all the non-Jews decide, well, I'll be Jewish then to save my life. Geiris doesn't work in that case, according to Rav Nechemia. So that's the opinion of Rav Nechemia, that if a person converts for the wrong reason, now that's the reason that explains, of course. There's a rumor that this non-Jewish woman has a relationship with a Jewish man. And then, all of a sudden, don't you know it? She gets religion on her mind and she decides that she wants to convert. So Rav Nechemia says, you know why they can't get married? Because she's not Jewish. The conversion which was done just for the sake of marriage was not a proper conversion. Therefore, she's not Jewish. If she's not Jewish, he can't marry her. That explains the Mishnah. That's the opinion of Rav Nechemia. Not everybody agrees, though. Ha'id marav amar av Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta mishmei derav halachik divrei amar kulam geirim heim. So the second opinion is the opinion of Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta in the name of Rav, who says that whatever the reason, if you convert, it works. So that's the case, why can't he marry her? There's a rumor that the woman has a relationship with the man. Then, all of a sudden, she decides to convert. So even if we say she's converting for the wrong reasons, but she's still Jewish, why can't they get married? Meshum de Rav Asi. Reason because of Rav Asi. Rav Asi haser mimcha akshos pi v'razus svasayim. So what's the reason for that? So the reason is because we try to not encourage Lashon Hara. What's going to happen? There's a rumor that Miss X and Mr. Y have a relationship. She can write, even though she's not Jewish and he is. Then magically she converts and now they're getting married. What are people going to say? Obviously the rumors were true. Obviously there was a relationship beforehand. So we don't want to encourage the rumors. That's the reason we don't let them get married, but in fact, she is Jewish. Now, this machlokas is a very important machlokas. According to one opinion, if a woman converts for inappropriate reasons, then in fact, she's not Jewish. According to the second one, she is Jewish. It's the same for a man. Right? If a man converts because he wants to marry a woman or for any other reason, unless he's doing it because he wants to be part of the Jewish people and closer to God, you're not Jewish. According to the second opinion, according to Peter, you are Jewish. Might not be the greatest idea, but it works. How do we at Paskin? So if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, we ask the Paskin like the second opinion. We hold that if a person converts for inappropriate reasons, the conversion is still good. Huh? Really? I wasn't kidding. That's real. Now, yes. Right. So that's a good question. The question is, wow, people are surprised. I'm sure most people would have expected I was going to tell you the other thing. Not only are you surprised, so was the Rashba. The Rashba points out that there is another Gemara in Chulin which sounds not this way. If anyone ever learned the Sefer Malachim, if not, you should. Sefer Malachim tells the story that after the 10 tribes were sent into Golus, they were replaced by another nation. That's what Sancheirov did. He would take populations and move them to different places. That's how he would, in order to stop potential for rebellions, he would take the people, once they were captured, put them in an uncomfortable situation. So we know that the 10 tribes went to someplace else. We're not totally sure where. We have names of it. But we are, that there were other people, Kutim, that were brought to Israel and resettled there. These Kutim send a letter to Sancheirav saying that, you know, thank you very much, we're having a wonderful time, but we have one problem. This minor issue, we don't mean to bother you, but there are lions that keep on eating us. And we would appreciate if we could maybe move, because this is really annoying. The Sancheirav looks into it and says, lions in Israel? There are no lions in Israel. There's two schleppy lions in the biblical zoo. I don't understand. That's how, what are they doing, lions in Israel? It's ridiculous. Lions are in Detroit. Who knows what lions are? So, in fact, what happened here? So he calls in some rabbis and says, what's this lion situation? So he explains that, you know, Eretz Yisrael doesn't do well with Avodah Zarah. And therefore, that's the reason the land is throwing them out, because they're idol worshippers. So he said, okay, I want you guys to go there, make them Jewish, you know, and therefore they won't be eaten by lions anymore, and I won't get letters. So they go down, they go back. So this isn't the Medrash. This is by and large totally in the Navi itself. They go back to Eretz Yisrael, and they convert the people, and the Gemara tells us that while they went through a conversion process, they kept on being Oved Avodah Zarah. So there's discussion. So how Jewish are these people? So the Gemara there assumes, and this is how we paskin, that we assume that the Kutim are not Jewish. The conversion was not a good conversion. So the question is, wait a second. This woman or this man who's converting for the sake of marriage, we said that their conversion is good, but these people are converting only for the sake of not being eaten by the lions. Why is that any worse? So the Rishonim, Rashba, Tosfos, say the following. This is very important. So there's basically two ways I can do a bad geiris. One way I can do it is I'm not Jewish. I meet a Jewish young lady, and I'm plotting to marry her. And I say, sweetheart, anything, whatever it takes. She says, well, you want to marry me? You're going to have to get up for minyan in the morning. So I'll get up for minyan. You're going to have to put on tefillin. I'll put on tefillin. I'll keep Shabbos. I'll keep kosher. Bris milah, fine, I'll get a bris milah. I'm willing to do everything. And the person, in fact, honestly accepts on himself Torah and mitzvahs, not for the right reasons, but in fact, they accept it. The second possibility is I go to a young lady and say, honey, I'd love to marry you. And she says, my father will kill me. Right? My father, he'll kill us both. It ain't going to work. You're not Jewish. So I said, well, what can we do about this? He says, you're going to have to convert. So what does that mean? He says, well, you're going to go to the mikvah, and they're going to ask you a bunch of questions. Whatever they ask you, the answer is yes. And that's it. So this person goes to the mikvah, and they ask him lots of questions. They say, you know, do you accept? Yes, 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 very good. After that, he goes out to McDonald's to celebrate that they've gotten past this, and then they get married. What? The bris was beforehand. And they had some bagels and lox. It was perfect. So the holidays. So these are two very different types of bad geiruses. The first one, in either case, the person's not doing it for the right reasons. But in the first case, even though they're doing it for the wrong reasons, when they say, I am a kabbal, the Torah and mitzvahs, I accept upon myself, they're serious. Whether they believe it or not, they'll do it. Right? They intend on keeping kosher, they intend on keeping Shabbos, they intend on davening, etc. So in that case, even though we're not excited about it, the Beis Din should try to discourage it and perhaps not accept, it works. Too bad. That's bad. It's bad news for them. This is a big problem. When you're on a Beis Din for geiris, you have to be very careful that it's good for the convert. If a non-Jew doesn't keep Shabbos and a non-Jew doesn't eat kosher, that's wonderful. Good for them. Why not? Right? They're not going to be punished for this. They have not. In the event that the person undergoes a geiris and then decides at a later date they don't want to keep Shabbos, they're in big trouble now. You're not doing anyone a favor by converting them if this isn't the convert. Because now there are Jewish persons who's Mechal Shabbos, they're eating treif, they know, and that's not a good situation to be in. Right? What? Yes, yes. Like the rest of us, once you're in, you know, blue pill, red pill, you're stuck. That's the end of it. So that's the story. So you got to be very careful. So it might not be the greatest idea in the first case, but it works. That's what we're talking about here. When the person was actual Makabel Torah mitzvahs. However, in the second case, what was the story with these kutim? They were still over in Avodah Zarah. They never stopped anything. So that, of course, doesn't work. With that in mind, so let's talk a little bit about what's going on now in Israel. There are many converts out there, and some of them are Orthodox, some of them are not Orthodox, etc. So if someone has a non-Orthodox conversion, so let's say a person's having a Reform conversion, and they're being honest about it. So when they're mekabel the Torah mitzvahs, they say, I hereby accept to myself that I'm going to drive on Shabbos, because Reform allows you to drive on Shabbos, right? I'm going to eat non-kosher because Reform allows that, right? I'm not going to go to the mikvah because the Reform doesn't insist on that. So that's Kabbalah Samitzvahs. Even the person doing it for the right reason, they're not accepting what they're supposed to. So that's why to talk about that in the Who is a Jew, it is beyond the other problems that are out there. Obviously, that's according to no opinion, is that a Kabbalah Samitzos that would make the person Jewish. I don't think many people disagree with that. I think when we hear about the Who is a Jew controversy, those aren't the cases that people are talking about. Yes, the non-Orthodox would like the State of Israel to accept their conversions. And to a certain extent, interestingly, they do. If a person has a conservative or reform conversion and they apply for the law of return, they are accepted. That the law of return is broad enough that it will even accept non-Orthodox conversions. However, if that person would like to get married in the State of Israel, they got another thing coming. Because even though the Misrat HaPnim will accept them as Jewish, the Rabbanut does not, and I think we could all agree that that's probably a good thing. Who is a Jew gets really dicey when it comes to people who self-identify as Orthodox, but one has to wonder from time to time. That is where the controversy has really kicked up. And the question is as follows. When it comes to conversions in general, there is no convert out there that knows all 613 mitzvahs before they convert. I don't know if there's anyone here who knows 613 mitzvahs, right? Right? I'm sure all of us from time to time run into something and say, wow, that's great to know. Why didn't I ever learn that before? So obviously, when it comes to conversions, there has to be a certain amount of faith. Just like at Har Sinai. What were the key words at Har Sinai? Na'aseh v'nishma. We'll do whatever you tell us as we learn it. Right? Nishma doesn't mean to hear, it means to learn. Right? Na'aseh v'nishma. We accept the Torah and mitzvahs, and we'll continue to grow, and we'll learn more and more, and we'll keep more and more. Right? So everybody, I think, would have to agree that the minimum requirement isn't that every ger know everything. But the minimum requirement is that the ger accept everything out there that they are aware of, and they should be aware of the basics, right? Obviously, if someone was converting and said, by the way, I accept everything except for Shabbos, they wouldn't be Jewish. And similarly, if somebody came forward and said, you know, I accept everything, but I haven't heard about Shabbos yet, it would also probably be premature to do a conversion at that point, right? Like you might not have to know all the Maisa Oreg and what it means to be Ose Shnei Batei Nirin, but if you never heard that there's something called Shabbos, you've got a problem. So that's where the problems lie. Where do you draw the line? What has to be accepted? Yes? That's not true. It's not true. The question is, why don't Svardim accept Geiris? So, it's not true. Svardim do accept Geiris. Syrians have a takan. Okay. So again, not every Svardi is a Syrian, right? Right? Syrians had made a decision not that long ago, right? Right? And the reason was because there were a lot of these hokey pokey geiruses going on, where Jewish men would start dating non-Jewish women, and then, you know, bada bing, bada boom, what is it? And she's, and that's it. These geiruses were terrible, and therefore they said, we have to stop it. So that's why they made an edict. Not such a crazy idea. In general, of course, getting rid of a whole section of the Torah like that is something that one should not take lightly. And I think nowadays there are definitely certain parts of the Syrian community which are reconsidering a little bit. But that was the idea. That was the concern. There's a major concern when all of a sudden you're overrun by questionable geiruses. Right? Because you have to remember, it's not just a matter that this guy's going to marry this woman, which itself problematic, but God willing, they'll be blessed with children. And we won't know their status. You know, and then have grandchildren that we don't know what their status is. And, you know, we'll have situations of boys in yeshivas and girls in Stern College coming forward when they're about to get married to realize it's not so clear that they're Jewish. Which is, unfortunately, relatively common at this point. So the who of the Jew controversy is a question of what do you require? There are people within the Orthodox camp who say that you don't require Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. It just doesn't matter. That the bottom line is if the woman says or the man says that they're going to be Jewish, it doesn't matter what happens afterwards. What happens if right from the mikveh they go to McDonald's to celebrate, as been known to happen? So, you know, we all have our Yetzirahs, they slipped up. But when they were in the mikveh, they really accepted it. It's very hard to accept. If one of my children came home and wanted to marry somebody who went to the mikveh and shortly thereafter went to McDonald's, I can't tell you I'd be happy about it. So that's the major issue. The major issue is no one is complaining about the mikveh, no one's complaining about the milah. The issue is the Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. And the reason that there are people who say that it's not that important are twofold. One is it's never mentioned in the original Gemara, as we pointed out. A. And B, of the Gemara, which says that in the event that a man was going rumored to be going with a woman and then she converted, she's still Jewish. Those are the sources they point to. On the other hand, there seems to be very strong sources going the other way. So that's the issue. Doing it for the sake of marriage is a major reason. You should know that there's a lot of other reasons why people are converting, particularly in Israel. I remember I'm not so hot, so on top of Israeli basketball, but there used to be a rule that teams in the Israeli league can only have two foreign players. Now, what will happen when there is a foreign player which gets into trouble in the NBA and all of a sudden decides that he's willing to play for Hapoel Tel Aviv? But they already have two chutznikim. So what they used to do is there was a rabbi in the Midwest who had a conversion business which specialized in African Americans 6'7" and larger, and sometimes literally overnight he would convert them. They would be converted, they'd come back on the long return, and they next thing you know they'll be starting center, right, by Thursday. Does anyone really think that's a good conversion? I mean, this guy doesn't know from nothing. His agent told him, who was probably Jewish, told him this is what he's got to do. It's very hard to imagine that this person is a Jew. This person has no intention of keeping anything. Even the person had an intention, they have no knowledge. So that's the issue. The issue when some people say that the following geiruses are no good, the question is, was there ever a Kabbalah HaMitzvah? Are these people just doing it because they have some ulterior motive? And because of that, they're just going through a process, but they're not actually accepting anything? Or no, are these people who actually have accepted upon themselves that they've spent years studying, there have been years of philosophical contemplation, and now they've decided this is what they want to do? So that is issue number one. Issue number two, which I have almost no time to talk about, so I'll say it quickly outside, is an issue that came up recently. Anyone hear about the Barkana controversy? Okay, well, I got one yes of it. There was a controversy over the summer, I think it was, where Barkana wineries. People have heard of Barkana, yes? Okay. What? Barkana is a very, at this point, probably the largest winery in Israel. Right, Barkana has vineyards literally up and down the country. Right, they have them all the way in the north, all the way in the south, a whole bunch in between. My wife and I went for a walking tour of the Barkana wineries last winter. One of them, uninvited. And there was an issue. The basic rules are as follows: that wine has kashrus issues that other things do not. Why? Wine that's not mavushal cannot be handled by a non-Jew. Therefore, all wines, at least until the point when they are boiled later in the process, have to be handled by Jews. It seems that Barkana, among their workers, they had some Ethiopians who were handling it, and one of the hashgachas said that they, in fact, are not Jewish, and therefore they have to be moved to a different part of the production. And this, of course, not surprisingly, led to quite a pushback over it. There is a major question as to whether the Ethiopians in Israel are Jewish or not. This is something that undoubtedly deserves its own shiur, but we'll just try to do it in 3 minutes or less. We all know, again, going back to that same part of Malachim, that 10 of the tribes went into Galus, and as of now have never been heard from again. If you take a quick look at number 10 on the sources, number 10, we'll just say it outside, is a machlokes as to whether the 10 tribes are ever coming back. Rabbi Akiva, who we generally follow, says no. They're gone and they're not coming back. Rabbi Elezer disagrees. In general, the rule is we follow Rabbi Akiva when he's against any of his contemporaries, but for various reasons, we probably do not follow him here. And in fact, we probably assume, to the extent that this is a halachic question, that the 10 tribes will come back ultimately at the end of days. Over the last few millennia, many, many, many groups have come forward claiming to be from the 10 tribes. An unbelievable amount, actually. The Library of Congress has its own section just on the study of the 10 tribes. There, back in the mid-18th century, when we came to this new land, there was belief among many that the Native Americans were from the 10 tribes. Right? We're all familiar, I'm sure, with the Ethiopians who claim to be from them, B'nai Menashe in India. There are Afghani tribes that say that they are. There are Chinese peoples who claim that they are, etc. There's no shortage of people who are trying to get on the 10 tribe bandwagon. The question is, to what extent do we accept them as Jewish? Focusing on the Ethiopians are a very interesting group, because back in the 12th century, there was a fellow called Eldad Hadani. Right, this fellow Eldad Hadani, Eldad from the Shevet Dan, he presented himself in Portugal and Spain as one of the 10 tribes who was living in Ethiopia, and he told quite the tale. And it was accepted by many, but it was rejected by others. For example, Tosfos quotes him indirectly as a source. The Ibn Ezra writes that he's a fraud. The Radbaz very much believed him, that he was for real, and he accepted the story. Fast forward a few centuries to where we are now, and there is a major question as to what is the situation of these Ethiopians. It's a two-part question. They claim to be a descendant of the group that Eldad Hadani came from. So one, is that true or is that not true? And even if it is true, is he for real? And even if he is for real and they are descendants, what's the story with intermarriage over the last few centuries? So given those three issues, there was a major machlokes. If you look at number 12 on the sheet, that is the opinion of Moshe Feinstein, who wrote that he does not believe that they are Jewish. Rav Herzog, the first chief rabbi of Israel, wrote that he did not believe that the Ethiopians were Jewish. The overwhelming majority of the opinions is that they are not Jewish. There is a notable minority, and that's number 11, that is Rav Avadya Yosef. Rav Avadya Yosef very much believed that they were Jewish, and they are Jewish, and there is no need for them to convert if they'd like to come. Now, even though Rav Avadya was a minority opinion, in the 1970s, when this question first came up, he happened to be the chief rabbi. So he was the only opinion that mattered at the time. And based on that, the state of Israel took the approach that Ethiopians are accepted as Jewish, they are encouraged to convert to be safe, but even if they do not convert, we accept them as Jewish. That has been the policy of Israel. My understanding is that about 25% of the Ethiopians do convert, meaning that 75% don't convert. So based on that, yes, the state of Israel has made it clear that they accept them as Jewish. It's not ridiculous to follow the majority opinion. And therefore, kashrus organizations do not want to put their kosher symbol on something which, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, is not kosher, according to Rav Herzog, is not kosher, according to Rav Sternbuch, is not kosher, etc., according to, honestly, the majority of the opinions is not kosher. Rav Herschel Schechter himself has written on the topic and has leaned toward the not Jewish approach, and that is supported actually by a paper by Dean Karen Bacon on the genetics of the Ethiopians. So again, this issue isn't a matter of racism. It's not a matter of, you know, Haredim gone wild. It's an issue of that's a halachic issue, that the state of Israel has rightfully followed the opinion of Rav Avadya Yosef, who was undoubtedly an important opinion, someone not to be ignored, for sure, and at the time he was the Rav HaRashi. But to say that, therefore, everybody in the world is bound to follow this, and therefore kashrus organizations should accept it, undoubtedly, that's hard to say. Yes? So again, I gave you a little bit here, but again, he believed undoubtedly that Eldad Hadani was Jewish, and he believes that these are descendants of Eldad Hadani. Those are the two steps. Again, Right, so again, Rav Avadya wrote many, many tshuvot in his day. Rav Avadya was a tremendous guru. In fact, we just had his yahrzeit, I think, last week. And he obviously, I am not doing this justice in the 1 minute that I'm saying this over, but long and short of it is that Rav Avadya believed that Eldad Hadani was Jewish, and he believes that these are the descendants of Eldad Hadani. That's what he believes. Now, again, it's a far more complex issue. Just to put something out there, it's very easy to get married halachically. A man gives a woman a something and says harem kadeshously in front of two other kosher people, that's it, they're married. It's very hard to get divorced. Halachically, like there's a few expert rabbis who do it. When a person unfortunately needs to get divorced, it's not so simple to get it done. There is a major concern that the kedushin of the Ethiopians was always good. It's not a hard thing to do, right? You just get done, they're married. If their kedushin was good and their gittin was not good, as it seems that it was not, then anybody who is a product of a second marriage is a mamzer. Correct. And if we're dealing with thousands of years, literally, we have to assume that the overwhelming majority might be mamzerim. And if you're not Jewish, we could fix that. If you're a mamzer, not as much. What? No, it says even 10 generations, a filu dor asiri. It says more than 10 generations, we don't undo it. So therefore, in many ways, it is a kula to say they're not Jewish, because it allows them to clean up their status, undoubtedly. Yes? I have no idea. Not that it matters, I don't think. No, again, they definitely believe that they're Jewish. They definitely have certain it's interesting. Even within the Ethiopians, there are different groups out there. There's the regular ones that we have. Then there's the Falasha Mura, which seems to have much more. Many of them converted to Christianity. It's a lot. They definitely have certain traditions. Some of them have a tradition that they were actually the descendants of Shlomo HaMelech and Malchus Shva. That doesn't make you so Jewish, though. So. Sorry. Well, why would they have the problem? The idea is that in Europe, you know, people got divorced and there were Mesadre Gittin who did a regular get. If their traditions, it's fun, you know, it's interesting. It's a worthwhile study. For example, they have the entire Tanakh except for Megillas Esther, because they went into Golis before it happened, right? They have a Mishnah, but every Mishnah, the Ethiopians, right? They have a Mishnah, and every Mishnah in it says, you know, Moshe told Yehoshua, and Yehoshua said as follows, right? No Amoraim, obviously, no Tanayim, no. This is all happened after their time. So somehow, whatever they were doing for Gittin, I mean, even if they did it right, according to them, we halachically would assume that that's not right. Again, maybe we'll have to come back another time and do it more justice, but for the time being, I think I've overstayed my welcome. Thank you very much.